Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Good afternoon. It's a fantastic Wednesday out there. I hope if you're listening, you're listening outside. The sun's coming out, and it's a little nippy, but not enough to chase you back in the house. I want to welcome today to the studio Anchorage School District Superintendent Carol Como. How are you?
I'm great. It's the first day of school, so it's another school year is launched.
I was just saying to the superintendent, I can't believe you're here. And she gave her principals a big compliment and said, "And here I am." So,
well, they've got the schools up and running, and they really have done a phenomenal job getting ready for the year. So it was time for me to come over and say thank you to everybody.
Give us a quick wrap up. You've been at the school district for many years now.
This is my 35th year in the district.
Wow.
Starting.
So. You know a lot probably about everything. You've worked a number of different jobs here. What are your goals for this year?
Well, my goals really are to see continuing academic achievement. And that isn't just test scores. It really is all our kids are making progress in what they're learning at the highest level they can for their abilities. And so that's our major goal. But I also want to assure the public that our staff is very competent. They very much care about students, and they're able to work, and kids are able to learn in a safe environment. So academic achievement in a safe teaching and learning environment. We certainly want the public to see good value for the school district. We want them to see us as an asset to the community, that that when people come here to move to Alaska, one of the questions they always ask is, where are the good schools? What's the quality of the school district along with other quality of life issues? So I want more and more business people, the realtors, anyone out there to really feel good about the Anchorage School District. So that's something we try very hard to bring to the district and just trying to be responsive to the community. We're becoming very diverse. And increasingly, we're expecting a number of families to move in from rural Alaska in the next couple of months. We are definitely getting an increase in some refugees and immigration, people immigrating here through the refugee resettlement and that kind of thing. So I think Anchorage is truly an international city in transition, I guess. So we've got to deal with that in the schools. But we need to look at it as an opportunity to support these kids because they're the next generation of leaders. And so but academic achievement, as far as we can take kids, that's really, really important to us.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. This is a live call-in program if you're listening in the afternoon. And you won't be able to hear this program this evening because of the running series on the election. So be sure to tune in for that and Michael Carey. And however, if you would like to, this will be on our website, and you can access it at kska.org. Our local number, if you have questions or comments for Superintendent Como, is 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or a toll-free 1-888-353-5752. And you can email me at communityforum@kska.org. How many schools are we talking about now in the Anchorage School District? It's a big number.
Right. This year it'll be 95 because we're adding the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School. And from what I understand, I haven't gotten over there this morning, but from what I understand, there are a lot of kids. And as of yesterday, they had 124 students, I believe. And we're hoping that as now that school's starting, that more and more people who had said they were coming are coming. And so we expect in the next couple of weeks that there will be more of those folks because they really need to hit 200 to really maintain. But we're real excited about that. We think it's going to offer a new style of teaching and learning for some kids who really would benefit from it. Any child can enroll in the school. It's definitely got Alaska Native American Indian focus, but that doesn't mean anyone couldn't benefit from the different kind of instruction. We also, of course, Clark is still closed. and their students are dispersed. But next August, Clark will reopen, and that is going to be one major celebration.
So
we are
excited.
So, it is wonderful.
That area.
Yeah, anyone that's driven by between the new bridge and overpass and what they're doing there, they're renovating the library, back to getting them a community library right there in the former library site, and then the brand new school is going to be very wonderful.
It sounds good to hear a library mentioned on this show for a change.
Yes, yeah.
Instead of election or vote.
Yeah.
Okay, once again, Carol Como's here. Give us a call. We're live for an hour, 550-8433. And I'm Nellie Moore here hosting the show today. It looks like the school district did, I know there's a lot of agreement or disagreement about whether or not testing is, you know, a really good measure of how schools are doing. Unfortunately, it's the only one we have right now. But the school district's adequate yearly progress report, pretty darn good.
We thought it was very good. We were less than last year but they raised the proficiency mark that everyone had to reach. So in language arts last year, it was 71.48% to be proficient. This year, the one we just released, it was 77.18%. And in math, it was 57.61% proficient to 66.09%. So for schools to be deemed proficient, there was quite a jump. And we're going to be, so there were more schools that didn't make adequate yearly progress. And we had that two-page ad in the paper last weekend. And I'm going to leave you this chart, because what we try and do is give out to the community every school and what level they're in with adequate yearly progress, but also to show, and I call it the DART chart, but by a dot of different colors to show what the issues are. Some of our schools only missed by one or two categories. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I feel so strongly that you can never measure the success of a school by just test scores or AYP. That's one important measure. But we need to look, if children are learning, if they're making steady progress, if they like to go to school, if their parents feel connected to school, and the children do, to me that's a successful school also, mm-hmm. where the adults care about the young people, that there are relationships built that are going to help kids feel good about what they're doing. That, to me, is a successful school. Test scores are important. They're a level of accountability. Federal government requires us to participate, and we're doing the very best we can. Each of the schools that didn't make adequate yearly progress will be writing a school improvement plan, taking each of the categories where they didn't meet the proficiency mark and writing as part of their school plan, their staff, their parents. They'll really look at their data and come up with a plan, and then I will be sitting down with each of the principals and their supervisors and really talking through mm-hmm. what they've got in the plan, why do they think this is a good way to increase student achievement. So we'll be doing that over the next probably 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about curriculum. Do you see any big changes this year? I noticed on the Anchorage School District website, you said at this point, you know, no big changes are planned to respond to, you know, some of the schools that have missed out on average yearly progress. But are we going to see any new math or reading curriculum, any changes in that area?
Well, a few years ago, we adopted a new reading and writing language arts curriculum that's a core curriculum now in all the elementary schools. And so last year, the final group of schools got training in that and have begun to implement that. So that will continue. We see it's working. We think it's good with our mobility that we have one basic adopted core curriculum, because then a student moves from one school to the next, they're going to be familiar with the books, the literature, and so forth. So that's one thing. Accept my recommendation to readopt the newer version of everyday math in the elementary schools. We have added some math support teachers that'll go out to the various schools and do more training. One of the things that elementary teachers sometimes lack is a lot of comfort with math content.
Right.
And some of that, in fact, we had a meeting last week at the university, and we were just pleading with them. They really need to work hard on beefing up the content mm-hmm. so the teachers feel comfortable teaching the math. So we're going to be working on that, and we think the curriculum will work. There are some significant improvements to the former program. So It's new, but it's not completely new. Mm-hmm. We certainly have our science curriculum. We need to do a thorough review of our social studies curriculum, but we didn't have enough resources to do that for this year, so we'll be working on that. One of the biggest exciting things that's happening this year is we have added about 25 more PE teachers in the elementary schools.
Wow.
Last year, we added about the same number of health teachers, so mm-hmm. we now have an extra hour of health and PE instruction, and at the same time, teachers are getting that time to plan and collaborate. That was part of the settlement with the teachers union 2 years ago. And we're very excited about that because we all know about the wellness issues. We yep. know about the obesity issues. Mm-hmm. And we all know that kids do better when they get up and move around. And we think that the pairing of health and PE, that more there, it's going to really enhance kids' fitness and wellness. And so we're very, very excited about that addition. At the middle schools and high schools, they're in the final stages of reviewing some of the new curriculum. So we're just building on what we know, looking at our data, trying to add more AP courses, accelerated courses for students who are ready. A lot of our kids are taking college-level classes now, mm-hmm. and we're trying to figure out how more could do that if they're ready for that, but the access without transportation is an issue. So
yeah.
there are a number of things. We're maintaining our construction academy and the third shift at the King Career Center, which has been very successful.
Wow.
And then we're going to start exploring another career pathway in health occupations because we know there's a great need and there's a lot of interest. And so we're working closely with the University of Alaska Anchorage and our King Career Center to really build an articulated program. So mm-hmm. Our workforce development is really exciting to see what we're doing there, and we'd like to do a lot more. So we're going to continue to work collaboratively with the industry, the unions, and the university to build some more career pathways. So students who, especially those who are going to stay in Alaska, mm-hmm. then there are lots of options for them. Some students are going to go straight to the university. Others may want to go to apprentice programs. Others may want to go to the community technical college. And, yep. You know, that's really like, it's not a junior college per se, but it's similar to a community college. And it really, they could get an associate's degree, they could get some certificates, and then they may change their mind and decide to go on into mm-hmm. the college or university. And certainly we have a large number of our students going into the military here too. So we just want our kids college ready. I guess that's the best phrase to use. It doesn't mean everyone's going to college, but we want them to access that. Anything mm-hmm. they want to do, we want them ready with a high school diploma. We really want kids to stay in school and focus on getting that high school diploma.
Mm-hmm. I know my husband and I for a few years ran a native dorm at UAF, and one of the problems that, you know, was continual was kids would get homesick,
right.
they'd
yeah.
leave. And finally, you know, we instituted a thing where, you know, to remove some of the stigma of leaving and saying, well, if you feel like you don't want to stay here, at least get through the end of the semester mm-hmm. and finish strong so that you do have,
so they have the
option of coming back.
Exactly.
You know, instead of just, you know, so every alternative, I think, for young adults that's available in education is a huge plus.
Oh, I agree. And I think one of the things that's really important is that, you know, it may take a couple of years out. Maybe they have financial issues or whatever. But if they've stuck with it through a semester, like you said, they're going to at least have that credit. And then they finally may find a field that they're really mm-hmm. passionate about. Because I am absolutely convinced that if you care about what you're doing and you love what you do, it makes it so much better than
yeah.
if you just say, oh, I hate this job, but I need money. Well,
yep.
there's a place for that if that's your only option. But the better thing is to really help young people figure out what their passion is
mm-hmm.
so that they can get the learning that they need no matter what it is. And there are some amazing opportunities here.
I wanted to touch on the gas line. Earlier we were talking about all of the things that are swirling around the community right now. We're talking about, you know, construction of the gas line. Now they're talking the potential for heavy oils coming out of the North Slope, which could be, you know, another 50-year supply if they can do it, figure out how to get that heavy oil out of there. At this point, Conoco and the other companies are advertising they're gearing up for the Denali gas line they want to build. Have people made contact with you and saying, hey, you know, we're going to need a lot of workers in this area, or, you know, you guys are pumping out a good number of welders, but we need more, or Is there talk about gas line at the school district level at this point?
Through our workforce development partnerships, and Rick Rios, who's our supervisor of career and technical education, Guy Okada, who's the principal of the Career Center, and a number of us have gone to a number of meetings, co-sponsored actually now by the Commissioner of Labor and Workforce Development and the Commissioner of Education, which I think has got to marry the two. There is mm-hmm. no question. Mm-hmm. And workforce development issues are really, really important. We're starting a math and science STEM program at Diamond High School. They're working closely with the university. The industry is also being part of that and talking with what are their needs. And there is only so much we can do. But higher level math and science, mm-hmm. critical for every career field anymore. Technology, absolutely critical.
Yeah.
My big worry, I will just be honest with you, I remember when the Trans-Alaska Pipeline was being built, a lot of school district employees around the state left to go to work on the slope. Teachers, a lot of people. So there's going to be a need to continue to develop those positions so that if people do go to work up on the gas line or some of these other fields, that we've got people to take the jobs they're leaving. And so it's much broader than just preparing for workers to work on the pipeline.
I never would have thought that that would be an issue, but
a lot of people
good
left. Very good. Bus drivers, all our maintenance staff, all of those. But even a fair number of teachers and clerical staff decided they had their years in or whatever, and they wanted to make a lot more money, and they wanted to be part of history, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so they left. And so I think it's a total look at workforce issues. It can't be just focused on the gas line. It has to be much broader than that.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today we're talking with School Superintendent Carol Como. Give us a call if you have questions or comments. Today is the first day of school, and I'm so happy to have Superintendent Como here. Our number 550-8433, 550-8433, are toll-free 1-888-353-5752, or my email is communityforum@kska.org. Your website is a tremendous resource.
Good.
It's easy to find information on schools, how to hook up with teachers by email, which is something, you know, just a few years ago, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have dreamed of, where parents say, well, I'm too busy to go into the school. Well, how can people access those teachers nowadays?
Well, it's getting easier, but one of the biggest steps next fall, we're hopefully going to go live with our new student information system. And one of the major goals is so that all grades attendance will be posted online. So 24/7 parent, student mm-hmm. could go in with a password and see how their students' grades are, and that's part of this new system we're hoping to implement next year.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of frustration. Some teachers really are good about emailing back and forth, and others, for whatever reason, just don't do it as often, and we get a lot of criticism for that. But I think next year, because the grades and everything will be mm-hmm. entered that way, I think that's going to increase parent satisfaction and certainly allow students to dial in and say, oh dear, I'm missing a lot of assignments. And so, and parents can do the same thing. So if a student comes home from school and the parent says, well, what do you have for homework tonight? Oh, nothing. And then at least the parent could dial in and look and see how the mm-hmm. grades are. Sometimes there'll be posted assignments there that parents can say, well, have you got your math assignment done or mm-hmm. whatever? So I think it's going to enhance things. The best thing, there is a way to set up through our website, and I think it's called MyASD. There is mm-hmm. a way, it tells you that, to go in there and
make a web page.
Exactly, yeah. And do that. So I think that that seems to be growing in popularity. But our webmaster, Kathy Griffith, is more than happy. If somebody sends an email just to webmaster and asks a question, they can't find something, or they want to know why we don't have something up on our website or whatever, she's really good about monitoring mm-hmm. that. And sending that back really quickly. So I really encourage people to send us feedback on our website.
And I really encourage you to call in. Give us a call. My guest today is Carol Como from the Anchorage School District. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. West High had a good outcome this year. They've been struggling a little bit. I noticed there was a press release on your website. Their graduation rates were the lowest in the district for our schools, and they made a big improvement last year.
Yeah, about 10% increase, and that's really, really good because they have a very interesting student demographic. They have the highest number of National Merit Scholars at the school, very high achieving. They've also got the lowest graduation rate and the highest dropout rate, and a lot of that has to do with kids moving in and out And so one of the things they really focused on was getting to know the students individually better and making sure that students knew how important it was for them to stay in school, to get an education. And they've gotten much better at adapting some of their programs to meet the needs of the kids. They've got huge diversity at the school, and not only language and culture, but socioeconomic. Mm-hmm. And so it's trying to keep the kids engaged, but I was so proud of them. They still got a long way to go to meet the proficiency marks, but that graduation rate was a huge increase, and they were so happy when they made that increase.
Yeah, and I noticed they're popping up more and more on the sports side, too.
Right.
A few years ago, their hockey team wasn't that good, or their football team wasn't that good, but they've made quite a few inroads, so yay.
Yeah, and I think what's happening, too, is I think the coaches and the teachers are really reaching out to students and saying, you know, you'd be really good in this sport. And a lot of them are not necessarily thinking sports, especially if they're new to Anchorage, or certainly if they're new to the country or they're shy. Maybe they can't afford the activity fee, but there is a way to get a waiver to that, you know, for those who would qualify to free and reduced lunch kind of things. So I think the coaches and the staff are really reaching out to kids and get them connected in some way. I mean, if you look at our choirs, you look at our teams, they're very diverse, and that's exciting to me because it really means there's more kids engaged in positive, healthy activities.
I was at Valley of the Moon Park yesterday, and the track meet, of course, was going on there.
Right.
And it was such a positive experience. You know, there were young people everywhere, and they're all running, having a good time. You know, there were no, you know, fights or anything like that. It was just a really positive afternoon, and I, you know, it never fails to impress me when you just see and realize that, you know, a lot of people have a tendency to say, oh God, teenagers, but you know, everybody was working hard. It was a great afternoon.
So. Oh yeah, and you know, I think that's the thing that hurts teenagers the most. They feel so frustrated because the vast, vast majority of teenagers are great kids. They're so committed to making this world a better place. And they are good people, but they feel so bad. They walk in a store, if there are two or three of them, and they're watched the whole time, for instance, you know. And they, in fact, the Spirit of Youth Group gives a youth-friendly business award, and they kind of go around and drop into different restaurants or stores or establishments, and then they kind of compare notes, and then they vote on youth-friendly businesses, and it's a great thing
because
then they give them a decal to put on their window if they are designated that at their annual banquet. They put an ad in the paper. They talk about it. Teenagers are big consumers, and I do think it's those kinds of things. But I will tell you, there are so many of our kids so engaged in community service. There are a lot of them involved in these political campaigns. So regardless of who they support, this is good because it's showing that if you want to support a candidate, you have to do the hard work.
You have to know what's going on.
You have to know about the issues. And so I feel so badly that the, say, 5% of teenagers that get all the negative media publicity, that do bad things, people unfortunately have the wrong image of the vast majority of our kids.
Okay.
And so
on that night, we're going to go to the phones.
Okay.
We're piling up here.
Oh.
Sharissa on line 8, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about the math curriculum. Actually, first I want to say, Carol, I think you're doing a fabulous job with the school district.
Thank you.
However, my children go to an optional school, and I've been really disappointed with the math program because it seems that there's not, I'm not one for promoting a lot of drill and repetition, but there's not enough drill and repetition for the information to really sink in. And I brought this up with the principal, and I've talked with lots of other parents, and, you know, unfortunately we're at a school where parents do other things so their kids don't fail, like Kumon and other math programs, to supplement what they're getting in the classroom. But I'm wondering if there's any thought looking at how kids are really learning their math facts in elementary school.
Well, I think that's a very good question. And the math curriculum, the everyday math that was readopted, one of the biggest criticism of the old program was just what you've just expressed. And I've talked to Ed Graff, the new executive director of elementary ed, who used to be the principal at Rogers Park, just the other day. And from his own experience as the principal there, talking to parents, talking to teachers, that's why we put some math coaches in into the budget for this year, to really get out there and analyze how math is being taught in the schools and where the facts, there is a balance between rote memory of facts and problem solving. Problem solving is huge. It's very important. But so are knowing those basic facts, because then you can solve the problems from more quickly than having to always look back to see what the multiplication tables or the add and subtract facts are. So we know it's a critical issue. I really would encourage you as a parent to work with your school staff and the principal. And if you're not comfortable, if you're not feeling the movements being made, certainly you could call my office or call Mr. Graff and talk with him, because I know he's really wanting to see parent satisfaction increase so that all students are more successful in math, because I don't think parents should have to supplement our basic program with tutorial programs unless a child is seriously behind and really struggling. So I think your question is right on the mark, and I appreciate you calling that in.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for your call. Craig on line two, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I want to echo the previous caller and say, Carol, you're doing an outstanding job, and we really appreciate it as a community.
Thank you.
The question I have is in regarding to the registration process. Of course, we just went through this again, and it seems like every year we go and we fill out the same papers year after year, and it takes a lot of time for those of us who have to go to them, you know, while we're working to accomplish that. And I'm wondering if there's going to be any streamlining of that process in the coming years, to whether we can get the documents online and then just drop them off, or if part of that web-based system you're talking about might actually allow us to register our kids online.
You know, that's another question I get a lot, and I think I don't know exactly if we're going to be able to do it next fall with the student information implementation, but I know we have to make this more customer-friendly. We absolutely know that people are busy having to come in the middle of the day. And again, like you said, fill out the same forms every year and multiple copies if you've got kids in different schools. So that's one of the suggestions that we hear a lot, and we are looking at how we could possibly move to either online registration or at least, like you said, download those forms, fill them out, and then get them to the schools in some fashion. So believe me, you're not the first person that's asked that question, and we are looking at it.
Okay, Craig, I understand your handwriting pain there. I wanted to take one more call and then talk about the budget a little bit. Heather, line nine.
Hi, Carol. I want you to elaborate a little bit more on fees and, more importantly, waivers to those fees. I had a conversation with a woman the other day. She's a West High School graduate, and she was enrolling her own West High School ninth grader, and, you know, went through all of the things and wrote out a check for, she said, I think around $200. And it was activity fee, and it was this, and it was that. And she had a real concern that, one, you don't take credit cards, two, you've got to have cash or a check right there with you. A lot of kids didn't have their parents with them to register, and there just seemed to be, her concern was, and I agree, is how in the world do some of these kids afford all of these fees? And, you know, I know there is a system for waivering, but, you know, is it easy? Is it embarrassing? Does it require a parent to be there? How do you handle those things? And I'll be happy to just listen off the line.
Okay. Well,
thanks, Heather.
Great
it's always
question.
Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Well, fees, unfortunately, are part of being able to keep our extracurricular activities program going. They no way support the total cost of extracurricular or co-curricular activities, but we absolutely believe those are critical for kids to be engaged in school. For many kids, that's the thing that hooks them to stay in school and keep their grades at least to a 2 point. The issue of credit cards, I have heard that recently again, and I need to check with my finance department to find out if that's possible. The waiver process is basically for students who would or their family would qualify for free and reduced lunch. There is a form to fill out, but it can be done confidentially. It is not something that parents should be embarrassed or students should be embarrassed about. I think the forms could be taken home, filled out, and then a student could bring them back and turn them in. The issue of when to pay the fees, I'm sure there are annuals. If people want to buy a yearbook, there's fees for that. There's parking lot fees if people want to drive. It's $100 a year or $50 a semester for that. Then the activity fee, and I should have brought those numbers with me, but I think it's $130 per varsity for high school activity and $80 per middle school interscholastic activity, but there's a family cap for 7th through 12th grade. So, and I think it's 350, somewhere like that. It's all up on our website. But there's a cap. So if a family has a lot of students want to participate, once they reach, say, 350, if that's the cap, they don't have to pay any more fees for the year for activities. And that was done many years ago to try and address some of this. But there is a waiver process. We try and preserve confidentiality. We don't want our kids being embarrassed to ask. The same thing for students who don't have lunch or breakfast. We have some money we've put into the budget for all the schools. So if kids are coming unfed, we need to make sure they get food. Mm-hmm. So having a check, I think the registration materials that go out in newsletters before school starts, people should know they have to have a way to pay. And a check is usually the standard way. And I honestly don't know what all the reasons are that we don't accept credit cards, but I can certainly look into that.
Okay, great question. How are we doing budget-wise? I know that the legislature has responded somewhat to superintendents all across the state saying we need to do something better than getting our pot of money well into the summer, and we have to, you know, when we're unexpectedly have to lay people off or hire more people or whatever. Now you've got a little more planning time.
Right. We were so grateful to the legislature, actually a year ago now, before last summer. Last summer, Mike Hawker, Representative Mike Hawker from South Anchorage and Eagle River, and Bert Stedman, the senator from Sitka, co-chaired Education Funding Task Force. And there were 11 people on it, 10 legislators, 5 from the House, 5 from the Senate, and then one community member, and that was Carl Rose from the School Boards Association. And they spent all last a year ago summer wrestling with these issues about forward funding, about how do we get adequate funding or even close to funding that we can that begin to address some of the mandates. And they put a 3-year plan in place. Governor Palin, when she rolled out her budget last year, was very supportive of this. In fact, she proposed $200 per student on the base. And what finally came out was $100 on the base per student each year for 3 years. And then at the end, they added one-time money, and they called them, I think they were energy incentive grants or something. It was trying to address on a one-time basis the increasing cost of energy, but it is only one time. Now, most districts needed a lot more than that just to meet the increased fuel costs, utility costs, transportation costs, and then the ongoing increase in salary and benefits, because in order for us to retain our employees, we have got to be more competitive than with the lower 48. It's getting harder and harder to recruit people to districts. But so the budget, there is a 3-year plan. They deposited a lot of the money, funded it into the education fund. And so it has to be appropriated each year. But they also significantly increased the intensive needs funding for special education students who are the most, they're medically fragile. They have sometimes behavior issues. Very complex students need a lot of extra staff to support them so they can go to school. And that was really directly addressing issues brought forward to school boards and superintendents to them. And they also approved two committees, standing committees, one in the House, one in the Senate, for just education. And so I think a lot of the issues that weren't resolved will come back to those committees over the next 2 years when the new legislature is elected. So I'm very grateful and very optimistic for the leadership shown by the legislature in many cases. We absolutely wanted the 200 on the base, but when it became very realistic that to get the retirement unfunded liability issue addressed, to get the energy cost addressed and the intensive needs funding, as well as an increase to the students, then it all had to come together. And so it was what it was. But we have better knowledge now of the next 2 years of funding. So with a 90-day session, we were able to finalize our budget. We were able to hire earlier. We didn't have layoffs. And it made a huge difference around the state. The energy issue is going to be huge.
That was my next question.
For school districts, because the legislation that was passed this summer does not address in any way public buildings. Now, the money we got through the education funding, the one-time money, certainly went a long way, and it allowed us in Anchorage to prepay our NSTAR bill before June 30th, and so we were able to free up that money because that had to be accounted for with one time, and that freed up some ongoing money in this year's budget. But it's just a one time, and that is a statewide huge issue that is going to affect every community in the state. And I think, hopefully, whoever's getting elected in these races, I hope they really are willing to get out there and listen. Really reach out, listen, and come up with some recommendations like the Education Funding Task Force did, holding hearings, listening, being willing to try some creative solutions, especially at a time when we have this huge budget surplus, trying to really get a longer-range plan in place. And I really believe the formulas for a lot of this have to be inflation-proofed. It does no good not to build a factor in, because even though we got these increases, the costs are going up faster than inflation. And if they don't address that, then we're going to be right back where we've always been, cutting, asking for money, putting it back in. And that is not a good way to do business.
And still, even in light of this, parents, of course, you know, make their contribution of boxes of Kleenex,
school supply fees.
It's a hefty little list, I noticed, for elementary school.
Oh, it is. And the other thing is, I worked at the Hugs clothing, a coat and school supply distribution. I've done it every year for years, and it was. There's more people. Mm-hmm. More people are struggling. More people are homeless or doubling, tripling up with family members.
Yeah.
And I think as people move into Anchorage from the bush, they're going to be doing that because housing is very expensive
here. It's going to be shocking to our community, I think.
It is. And it's also going to be shocking to the people moving in unless they have a place to stay. I really worry because we're going to have more homeless families, more homeless kids, and the stress that brings. You know, kids can't learn if they can't focus on learning instead of if they're hungry or if they're don't get much sleep because whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think we've got, as a community and a school district and a state, we have got to grapple with this and the safety net issues too.
Okay, Janice on line 6, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a mother of quite a few sons who have went through the school system.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, sons are good.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, and some have graduated, some are almost graduated, but they have seemed to score really high on their SATs, but we have a hard time getting them, you know, to motivate to do schoolwork. And I just think the school system here doesn't seem to focus on boys. I have some friends who have the same problems. And I was wondering if anything's being done to give attention to boys who don't seem to apply themselves in school.
Well, you know, I think that is a really important question and topic. I took a class in June that was all about boys in schools, and I went to a workshop in last April on it. In fact, I'm reading a book called Hear Our Cry, and it's about boys in crisis in our society. It's more than just schools, but certainly schools are a part of it. And what the brain research is showing, that a lot of boys' brain development is slower than girls in the sense of their verbalization abilities. That's why they need so much more activity to keep them engaged and focused. And I think that as the brain develops over time, sometimes we expect boys and girls to act exactly the same in schools. And unfortunately, with a predominantly female teaching force, if they're not knowledgeable of how to adapt their teaching styles and how to figure out what engages boys in learning, boys do disengage. And I can tell you, I had two students, too, who went through this whole system. And in both cases, by the time they hit middle school and high school, it was a bigger challenge. And they were bright. They're doing fine as adults. But it's a matter of really looking at how we're delivering instruction. Are we making it relevant to what they're interested in? We're using more and more technology now, which obviously is a draw, trying to capture their interest in that. But I think when we did our high school forums last year, one of the things that came over and over and over, you need to put some work study in there, do some mentorships or service opportunities to get out into the workforce to see kind of what this education's all about. Is it a career field they're interested in? If so, what kind of education? So I think we're going to be engaged over this next year of continuing those discussions about high schools and particularly the boys, because we do know that our training and professional development, we're doing more of it, but we know we need to do a lot more of it. And some people have even suggested looking at single-sex classrooms periodically, and we're not adverse to that. And in fact, there are a couple of schools that I understand are going to be doing that this year. And of course, it's got to be voluntary, and it's got to be the teacher's got to want to teach a single-sex class, and the students in it, parents and student, need to want to be there. But some of the research is pretty interesting about successes with those for different kids. Not all kids need that. Some kids are just fine.
In the case of boys? Or
yes, and girls, actually, because as girls get older, they get less willing to take risks as far as classroom questions and that, especially in math and science.
Making yourself look.
Right. And boys tend to withdraw if they're not real comfortable with writing and some of the verbal skills that girls are much stronger at. So it's really kind of really using all this research to really see what really does work best for boys.
Okay. Yeah. Hear our cry. Check that book out.
Okay. Thank you.
Spread the word. Okay. Let's see. I had an email question from Soren. How would reforms to No Child Left Behind promised by presidential candidate Barack Obama affect the Anchorage School District? Obama says on his website, teachers should not be forced to spend the academic year preparing students to fill in bubbles on standardized tests.
Well, I absolutely agree that our school year should not be focused on filling in bubbles on standardized tests. I absolutely believe in the intent of No Child Left Behind, that we were not maybe paying as close attention to all kids before as we are now. So that's a good thing. The bad thing is that it's so prescriptive, and the Department of Education in Washington, D.C. should not be running the schools in any place. It really should be up to the locally elected school boards, state departments, and legislators and educators to decide what is most appropriate. Now, I personally am a fan, and I'm sure this will not be popular, but I am a very strong fan of national standards in the core areas, because one of the things we've learned is every state has a different assessment system. So in some states, they have very low standards. Some have very rigorous standards, and compare school district or state A to state B, you can't compare them. They're like apples and oranges. And the NAEP, the National Assessment for Educational Progress, is a national assessment, but they're only using random samples. So we don't get any ability to see how the students in Anchorage on the NAEP are stacking up against the students in Boston. And I think that is an important discussion, because we're being compared collectively in this country with all the foreign countries who are doing very well, especially in math and science. But we have nothing that we can take our school district and say, okay, Anchorage students are doing really well here. Anchorage students are way below here. We need to put more emphasis. Mm-hmm. But national standards are very controversial to a lot of people. But I do think there could be a national assessment and then let local school districts and states develop their curriculum, develop how you get there. But I do think there needs to be some way to compare. We're such a mobile country. Oh. People move all over, and people do want to know how we stack up against someplace else.
Okay, Kent, on line 4, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I've got one very quick comment and one question. My comment is that I'm a third generation from a family of school administrators, two superintendents, one deputy assistant secretary of education, and I'd like to give Superintendent Como my highest regards for their unbelievably upbeat and outstanding performance as long as I've lived in Anchorage. And my question for the superintendent is that we have five children in the public school district. The youngest is entering kindergarten, and we were entering her in the Russian immersion program at Turnagain Elementary, and the family debate ensued about the value of very early language immersion as opposed to getting a more broad-based education in the early elementary years and going into language immersion later.
Well, thank you, first of all, for your very kind words. I appreciate it very much. We know if we could figure out where to get all the teachers, we would offer elementary students from kindergarten on up a world language, whatever it is. We know second language, at least, is something that is really important. Bilingualism should be valued, not criticized, in my mind. Our immersion programs have been wonderful, and the kids that are in them and stuck with them have incredible opportunities when they graduate from high school. As far as career fields, they can go anywhere in the world and have wonderful career choices. But it really is a challenge to find teachers, enough world language teachers. The university we were talking with yesterday, actually, and about interpreters, trying to find enough legal interpreters. And one of the challenges at the university is there aren't enough people going into education to become interpreters or world language teachers. So it's a supply issue of teachers. And we don't want to start a program that we couldn't continue all the way through. And so that's why we've chosen the path of these partial immersion programs.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. I just wanted to comment on that a little bit. You know, we hear a lot about bilingualism and trying to teach kids their language at home, whether it's Inupiaq or German or Japanese. But I thought it was very interesting. A few years ago, I had gone to several events at McGill University in Montreal and was meeting quite a few natives from Greenland and the Northern Arctic. And they not only spoke English and their language, Inuktitut, but they also spoke Danish and French. It just blew me away. I mean, why are we not able to do this in our own country?
Well, I think it's twofold. One,
they're closer to other languages.
Oh, yeah. For one reason, I think for years and years, people have really only wanted English. World language, foreign language, as it used to be called. I call it world language because they are to all over the world. We just have to have the teachers. I don't know how they get enough teachers over there to teach all those languages, but I think it's wonderful. And we are way, way behind in this. That whole book, Thomas Friedman's book, The World is Flat, there's lots of books that talk about this. The global economy, people coming through here, we just need to value language. But it's going to change and get the supply of teachers. I know there are a number of states that are now passing laws mandating a requirement that every child has to have a world language requirement, but now they're having to step back from because they can't get the teachers.
Right.
They're importing teachers from overseas where they can, but then immigration rules, there's a quota system for how many new immigrants can come in.
Yeah.
And even if they're in certain job categories, we can't even get them in at the right time. We struggled 2 years ago, 2 years in a row, with our Japanese immersion teachers because after 9/11, the requirement, the visa requirements changed, and the time they had to be out of country didn't work with a school year. We've had a real struggle with some of our folks teaching. We're starting a Mandarin Chinese program at Scenic Park. It's not an immersion program. It's going to be a FLES program is what they call it. But it's every student will get some exposure to Mandarin, and eventually we'd like to get it into a partial immersion. But it's finding teachers and keeping it going so you don't start something like in kindergarten and first grade where the kids just soak it up like a sponge, and then we can't find the teachers that can teach the language but also teach the content at a high level. And that's the tricky deal. So I don't know how the other countries do it, but I think it is really important that United States leaders, if you will, research that. That's what the U.S. Department of Education should be doing, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. is really looking into some of those things and really seeing what we can do as a country so that all of our kids learn multiple languages.
Have we gotten softer? You know, people say, well, you know, we nurture our children so much now compared to 50 years ago, you know, never mind those spankings. You know, if your kid really doesn't feel like doing his homework, it's okay. He'll get it done tomorrow. Or, you know, making your kid learn the correct way to pronounce words. I mean, when we were going to school, everything in our English classes had to be pronounced correctly. And now, you know, the majority, it seems, you know, the pronunciation for our language is changing, which is fine. You know, languages change.
Right.
But it just seems really rapid now. And I don't know if that's because we've had a huge influx of other languages or we're just not taking the care with English that we used to.
I think it's the latter. I think our society in general is far more casual than it used to be. And technology, television, videos, I think too many kids are emulating what they see on videos and TV, music lyrics, that kind of thing. I remember well going to school many years and many years ago and diagramming sentences.
Oh, God, I was
talking to Mary Hughes the other day about this, and we were both laughing about the way we learned English. It's what you said. We were expected to write correctly, and we've got to get back to more of that. It is not okay for kids to just write like they text message. That is one of our challenges. Every school in the district this year is going to have a writing goal because we need to do better at writing mm-hmm. skills, critical writing skills, not just creative ideas. Let's fix it. Let's edit it. Let's polish it.
I mean, what has happened with ING?
Oh, I know. So it's just the whole culture has gotten very much more casual. I also know, I think the term helicopter parents is a good one. Hovering parents, and there's a lot of reason for that. And I look at my own children, and they're doing a great job as parents, but they're a lot more tolerant of some of this. Oh, I don't want to do this, or I don't like this, and they're not as strict as my husband and I were.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope they understand kids are going to push the envelope as far as they can, and they're going to take the easy way out. And yet, kids need to know what their boundaries are and the expectation is. And I always told our kids, your job is to go to school and learn. And believe me, my kids were not angels and my kids were not perfect and they could have done so much better in school. But they knew what our expectations were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the issue. We've got parents now going off to college with their kids literally hovering. And I've talked to a number of people in colleges, residence colleges, and they're really in shock of how parents can't seem to let go. So
mm-hmm.
I don't quite know what that's all about. But a good example, my fifth grade granddaughter in Georgia, she's into this text messaging now.
Oh,
and so
man.
She's writing all these codes and stuff. And when I was down there visiting, she was doing this email thing back and forth. And yet 2 weeks ago, before school started, her mom told me that she and her friend decided, well, we better practice real writing because we're not going to get away with this in school. And so that was good to hear because she knows, because she's a good student. Good writer, but she said, we're getting really sloppy, you know, you instead of Y-O-U, it was you, and then, you know. So I think it's going to be a challenge. Technology is taking over everything and changing, but we can't just get so sloppy because that's not going to work. We have to educate our kids to communicate appropriately, and there's a difference in critical writing and reading and just casual conversation. And so we need to make sure casual conversation isn't driving everything. It should be the other way around. So we're going to be looking at that a lot this year.
And which is, how many immersion schools do we have now? I know there is Japanese.
See, we have, excuse me,
Russian.
Japanese at Sand Lake, Mirrors, and Diamond. We have the two-way Spanish immersion program at Government Hill, Romig, and West. We have the partial immersion Spanish at Chugiak Elementary, Mirror Lake Middle School and Chuyak High School. We are adding, we have Russian, and I think it's up to fourth or fifth grade now at Turnagain, and then it'll move into Roman.
German.
Russian. Then we've got in West, and then the German, excuse me, charter school started last year, and it's all grades, K-7, I think they have this year. And then we're starting this Mandarin Chinese different program, but so there will be some, but it won't be in the in-depth like the other programs.
Mm-hmm. And what about technology? I know, is the school district able, I mean, how do you judge what the cutoff is? I mean, are kids getting computers in the classroom, or do they have up-to-date software? How do you keep up with all of that?
It's very hard and very expensive. Mm-hmm. The board did support, one time, allowed us to replace about 3,500 computers that were so old that they just couldn't even be upgraded with the software. The software is easier to keep up with, but then the machines mm-hmm. get more powerful. We received a grant from the School Boards Association through a legislative appropriation 2 years ago now, started at Wendler with a one-to-one laptop computers and a team of kids, and we've been able to expand that a little bit. And we just got another small grant. There's a new Dell that not even this big.
Wow.
It's about actually this big, and it's very sturdy. And we're going to try that in three different – one at the high school, one at the middle school, and one at an elementary school as a pilot to see if people can use these because mm-hmm. they're much less expensive mm-hmm. and apparently quite powerful. So we're trying to figure this out. We know technology is part of lives.
I mean, geez,
we have to live with
people
it.
People are posting photos instantly. There are instant communications all
right.
over the world. It's amazing.
And we're working on how to allow the use of MySpace and Facebook and that with some blocks.
Yeah.
Because right now they're blocked on our site. But we're missing a lot of educational opportunities, but we don't want to open the floodgates. Number one, the bandwidth, it would be a huge problem.
Yeah.
But the other thing is the way young people, unfortunately, don't always use good sense when it comes to what they put on these things. Mm. And so we're working through it, but it's evolving and it's very, very expensive.
Right. I know that myself. I have my poor old computer. I keep touching it every morning and saying, please make it through one more day.
Right. And the other thing is really, truly training and helping our teachers know how to deliver instruction mm-hmm. using technology. It's a totally different way to teach. And that is very traumatic for people that are very good at a more traditional way of teaching and very intimidated. Now, some are just thriving. They love it. They're one of those. Mm-hmm. They love anything new. Then there's
yeah.
others. And so we're working through that because that's a very difficult challenge, too.
I spent a couple of weeks this summer with a teenager in the house, which hadn't happened for a while. And the young man was going to school in Colorado. And I'm telling you, he was constantly texting,
right.
you know, friends back in the Springs, and it's like, whoa.
It's a whole different world.
Yeah. I mean, they are carrying on a conversation, and they never let that phone down.
No, and I know, and if it's not the cell phone, it's the texting, though. It's not the calling so
yep.
much as the younger ones. And that's what my grandkids don't have a cell phone yet, but they've got the access to the family computer. But I can just see as they mm-hmm. get older, it's mm-hmm. going to be that.
Yep.
And I've heard people say, oh, yeah, my child just sits there with their telephone. We're at the dinner table, and they're texting. They don't have to look at it. They're just talking and texting.
Yeah. I mean, my five-year-old gets on my computer
yeah.
and gets on PBSKids.org.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
I know.
Without my help.
No,
like,
they're the ones we need to help us. Because
yeah.
they really, they're not afraid of it. They're creative. They take risks. And
darn
anyway,
young
yeah.
kids.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, well, I want to thank you, Carol Como, very
sure.
much for coming on the first day of school. Parents out there, hang in there.
Drive carefully through school zones today.
Yeah, no tickets.
Now. Right.
And next week is Community Forums week off, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. You have a great fall time out there. I'm Nellie Moore. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
Community Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us. KSKA, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Or email us at communityforum@kska.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at kska.org/communityforum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.